Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Back with this week, and we are so proud that we get him, is Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Welcome, DA Soares. I love the fact that you're with us and can tell us a lot about not only what's on the scene, but behind the scenes. So let's talk first about police reform. Now, the governor of New York, who has, you know, some surrounding scandals of his own, called for every locality to come up with a plan for police reform. What do you make of it?
Well, look, I think police reform is something that not only New Yorkers have to engage and discuss, but I think it's a national issue. For years, I've been talking about professionalizing the institution, because you have pockets of extreme professionalism. Like you'll have certain communities that require higher degrees, higher testing standards. And then you have, you know, other locales that have cousins and uncles and friends that are hired. And both of these agencies are cloaked with the authority of the law. And I think that what we see almost routinely every day now is just the disparity between, the good departments, the professional departments, and those that are way below standards.
So how do you do that? I mean, we do know that district attorneys, right, and you and I have talked about this before, need the police in order to make their cases. And a non-cooperative police department could really hurt what you're trying to do as a prosecutor. Is that right?
I believe that, we're fortunate here in Albany. We have over 13 different agencies that we deal with, and that's not even including some of the state agencies or the agencies that are attached to the colleges. But, it's pockets that you have in our state where, you know, some agencies, it's an embarrassment of riches, where you have extreme competence. You have certificates and certifications that they all endeavor to achieve. And so there's always training. There's always that pursuit of excellence. But that's not clearly done all across the board, which is why I believe that in addition to what the governor had asked, which is for every single law enforcement agency and community to reevaluate their department's policies and procedures, I think it's not only important that we do that at the state level, but that needs to be standardized federally so that a person who's driving from Albany, New York to Maryland, to Baltimore, Maryland, can always expect the same level of professionalism, courtesy, and training that they get back home.
Okay, so let's go a little more national than local, David Soares, district attorney, and take a look at some of the driving while black arrests or murders, in my opinion, that we have seen. So can you talk a little bit about, just from what you're watching, how you see this either evolving, changing, or whether it's going to stay the same?
Well, unless there's action that's taken, unless that we can all agree that action and legislation must follow, I think it's always going to continue. I've been stopped for driving while black even as a district attorney, right? And I know the law. The car that I drive is fairly recognizable, but that's happened to me. So imagine what's happening all across the country. And now, you know, the videos just validate the concerns that I think if you're a person of color, you've always expressed. But now those videos are validating those experiences. But what they're also doing is they're showing the most horrific of those experiences and the outcomes of what should always be routine. The thing that I can't get over is the fact that you have such a disproportionate response to offenses that are otherwise nonviolent and really don't need the level of adrenaline and hostility. You know, with respect to George Floyd, it was the passing of a $20 bill. Who could ever possibly think that the passing of a $20 bill would result in the death? And here, you know, in Staten Island with Mr. Garner, it was the selling of Lucy's, the untaxed, tobacco. And then the young man, you know, who we just recently all witnessed his death, it was a simple vehicle and traffic stop. So this has got to end. Departments all across the country have to do a much more effective job in training its people. You know, bias training is essential. There's no reason why people in the United States of America who have more melanin content in their skin have an entirely different experience while operating motor vehicles than others.
You bet. That's exactly right. So, David Soares, let me ask you a personal question. If, in fact, one of the things that you saw in Virginia or you saw these other places happened again right here in Albany, what would your reaction be? I mean, would you prosecute?
Well, now, thankfully, the legislature and the governor in New York, which they've been extremely busy over the last two sessions engaging in criminal justice reform, they've just codified what used to be the Executive Order 147, and they've granted jurisdiction to a lot of those interactions, especially interactions that result in death, to the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General now, as of this past legislative session, is the home of the Office of Special Investigations that permit them to displace local prosecutors and conduct those investigations on their own. And they also, within the Attorney General's office now, as a result of the legislation recently passed, they have the law enforcement misconduct investigation unit. So I think New York is heading in the right direction in terms of pursuing these cases and doing so without the involvement of local prosecutors, because there is that perception that prosecutors and police work too closely. And so if that's what the legislature and the governor believe will address the issue in an effort to restore confidence in the system, then so be it.
You are, David Soares, the president of the District Attorneys Association. So I wonder, I mean, you sound so reasonable, whether or not you can tell us on this program whether or not what you're telling us is, in fact, what's going on in other district attorneys' offices.
Well, I can tell you that, especially the objections that I've registered and other objections that our association have expressed, it's just not the overall global policies. It's we get down to the very specific issues, you know, the codification of these statutes. In other words, there's a majority of us within our association that supported the marijuana, the recreational marijuana legalization. But we were also quick to point out that the legislature didn't complete the job, because a person under the age of 21 with marijuana, they forgot to include them, and there's no enforceable action that law enforcement can take. So we pointed those things out, and sometimes I think our objections to very specific subsections are taken as an objection over the whole, which is just not the case. And so I will say that over the course of the last several years, with the new Senate in place, there has been more room for dialogue, and it feels good when people are listening to you, and then they take corrective action. We're not always going to agree, because we obviously have a very different mission, but it's great to see, you know, lawmakers and other elected officials be able to engage in dialogue and arrive at a conclusion, even though there may not be, you know, 100% agreement.
You know, David Soares, I am not a fan of the legislative process. I saw how the sausage was made over many years. And so one of the things that really does challenge us is the fact that they do what's political and good for them, as opposed to what's good always for the people. I don't expect you to say, yeah, you're right, Alan, but, you know, I've watched them get very political. One of the things I really don't like is I happen to know that they don't give you enough money to run your own office. And the reason that is so terrible is that your job as the district attorney of Albany County, where the legislature and the governor sit, is to basically police them. And I have always thought that they gave you less money than you needed just so you wouldn't police them. What do you think?
Well, it is interesting because, you know, Albany has a very unique jurisdiction when it comes to crimes, as does Manhattan. You know, Manhattan, you know, because of their unique location and a lot of corporate headquarters are there, and they can basically prosecute cases that don't necessarily occur there. And it's the same goes for Albany County. Theoretically, we should have double the staff if what we were, you know, charged to do is to pursue, you know, the many public integrity cases that surface, you know, in Albany County. I can take you back to years ago when we prosecuted Alan Hevesy, the former state comptroller. You know, we had the attorney general's office then making a referral to us. We had the U.S. attorney's office reaching out to us, making that referral, and we prosecuted that case. Well, I think prosecutors saw the kind of attention that that case received. And now whenever there is an issue of public integrity, you don't have those agencies making those referrals anymore. They're looking to take on those cases by themselves. And so you do have greater activity by the Southern District, the Eastern District. You have greater public integrity activity by the Attorney General's office. I'm just happy that it's taking place, and it does allow for us to then pursue the more local flavor cases that really impact public safety and impacts our citizens.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned New York City, and I'm glad you mentioned Manhattan, because right now a lot of people had put a lot of money on Cyrus Vance, the district attorney, presently says he's not going to run, to go after Trump. Basically, that they had been assembling information, they had gotten tax things. So far, nada nunca. The question I have for you, David Soares, district attorney of Albany, is what can we read into that?
Well, I can tell you things that you should be, you know, looking out for. And Cy Vance is one of a great personal friend of mine. And it's an office that I have such high regard for its professionalism and the fact that they also do a lot of work to help other local offices. But I think the first thing that people should have taken notice of was the fact that he searched outside of his own office to obtain the people with extreme qualifications in following a lot of these very complex money cases and real estate and tax cases. So that to me was the first sign that this was no ordinary investigation and prosecution. He went out and specifically hired firms that are accustomed to understanding these very high complex international transactions. And the fact that they continue to acquire more information, and now that I last read, there's a family member of one of the individuals charged with some of those financing schemes that's cooperating with his investigation. I think the people, citizens of New York State, should have a tremendous confidence in what Cy has been able to pull off. And let's also not forget that you also have another prosecutorial agency in the form of the Attorney General's office that herself has a number of experts, some that are in-house and others that they've also hired to take on other aspects of the Trump, the Trump empire. So these cases are not cases that can be developed overnight, and it takes time. But the fact that they continue to be in the courts, the fact that they continue to subpoena more documents, tells me that they really have a tiger by the tail here.
I don't want to give you adjective, David Soares, my friend, and district attorney of Albany County, but remember that the governor of New York has his own problems right now. Has anybody been banging down your door to look into this?
Sure. So the issue is this, right? You have the allegations that have been made, and I think that's a matter of public consumption. People understand what's happened. And so then once you understand that there are allegations that have been made, you have to then determine, you know, according to the people making these allegations, where did these events take place? Did they take place locally here in our county? Did they take place in Manhattan? And so then there's the other issue of of the governor having authorized through, you know, executive order, the attorney general to pursue certain investigations. The attorney general is out there conducting her own investigation. So there's a lot of overlapping that occurs here. But with respect to allegations that involve complainants who are alleging sexual misconduct, those complainants must, you know, come in and engage with prosecutors and law enforcement. And they have to take that extraordinary step of wanting to pursue those charges. And so there is a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that are happening right now. Time will certainly tell.
David Soares, district attorney. We know that there's a penchant for district attorneys to have to seek re-election every 4 years. Is that complex for you? In other words, you have to raise money, you have to get donations. Is this something that the public doesn't know about or ought to be aware of?
Well, you know, we do that, and I will say that look, I'm just beginning my fifth term, and the landscape was certainly different in the early 2000s, because I think that there was always this this notion that prosecutors are different, and so they should not engage in behavior that, let's say, an assembly person or a person who's seeking reelection for the Senate would engage in. But I think over time, what's happened is we're all sort of being lumped in together where we have to raise money, and we have to be extremely cautious as to how we go about raising money. We have probably more deconfliction than any other elected office, because you want to make sure that individuals that are contributing to you are not individuals that are currently involved in any investigations. And so it's a little more difficult to campaign and seek re-election and raise money as a prosecutor. But it's something that has to be done. It's a cornerstone of our democracy. Certainly, I ran in this last cycle with COVID. It presented many more challenges, but thankfully, we were able to get our message across. And I think that if we're going to change, you know, election laws, perhaps with prosecutors should be, you know, where we start. Only because, as I said earlier, we are different, and the responsibilities that we have is completely different and nonpartisan.
David Soares, let's talk a little bit about Letitia James. You've referred to her a couple of times. That's the Attorney General of New York. Some people think AG, Attorney General, really stands for almost governor, because that's where the governors have been coming from. Have you had conversations with her?
Yes, we've had conversations. She's got a great staff. Some of the individuals who are working, you know, for the Attorney General are people that worked in my organization. And generally speaking, I think that all of us understand that we're in this together, that the challenges that we experience are unlike any challenge that, again, other elected officials experience. We're not doing ribbon cuttings. You know, we don't have the luxury of an opinion. Sometimes we have the burden of proof. And so it's an interesting time in New York. You know, I can remember going back to the Allen Hevesy case. Once Mr. Hevesy was removed, there was an extreme reshuffling of leadership in our state. If you can remember, we had a fairly new governor. We had a new senator. We had a former congresswoman who became a senator. There was so much reshuffling. And we also had a new attorney general in the form of Andrew Cuomo at the time. And so I remember being here in Albany, experiencing all of the shifting and the changes, and how we struggled as a state in order to get on a proper footing because of all of those changes. But I think what we have here now is an attorney general that understands her role. There was no learning curve for her. She took office and was immediately challenged both on the national stage as well as on the local stage. And I don't think that the attorney general's position in the state of New York can be viewed as a stepping stone any longer, because there's serious work that is expected of the attorney general's offices here in the state of New York.
Well, okay, I hear you. I wanted to ask you about something I'm very grateful for as the head of a series of a lot of public radio stations, and that is we're very lucky to have you. And you come on our roundtable program, you know, probably once a week. And this is something I don't think a lot of district attorneys do, but I love it because people get to understand what it is you do and talking about it. Now, we're talking on a different program now, but how did you arrive at that decision?
Well, I think it's important for people not only to see us as representative of the criminal justice systems, but also to see us as human beings with a sense of humor, human beings who are compassionate, and human beings who have other interests. You know, your station, the reason I enjoy it so much is because it just seems to me that we have lost the various arenas for public engagement and discourse. It's almost now people almost seem to choose their own information bubble or you know, ecology. And I find that the dialogue to be extremely interesting. I find your listeners to be extremely well informed and challenging. There's a lot of pushback when statements are made, which I don't see in other places. And so I just feel like public radio, as much technology as we have available to us these days, and as many different sources to get information, I just believe that your radio station is that local coffee shop that people can huddle around and just see one another and engage. It's always amazing to me the number of people that I meet out in public who tune in. And you know, again, whether they agree with you or disagree, I've had those conversations too while walking Lily.
That's Lily the dog, right? Talking about when
that
you're
walking Lily. Yes.
I didn't know if it was a relative or what, so that's why I'm asking.
Yes, but you know, it's just so important, and I applaud you for your service, and I applaud your station for what they do for people, not just locally here, but throughout your reach.
David Soares, what keeps you up at night?
I have children, and the world that I'm living in right now is not the world that I grew up in. And that's not to say that we didn't have, it's just not to say we didn't have racism. It's not to say that we didn't have violence. I stress about the world that my children are going to, they're living in and going to be raising their own families in someday. I see what the George Floyd case, you know, it's so prominently featured right now. And I see what's happening all throughout, you know, the country. And my heart really aches for us. And it doesn't seem as though we've paused, that we've taken the time to take a deep breath and engage in the kind of discussions that need to be engaged in now. I think there's such a fear of offending people that we watch our words and we govern our language so much so that we're really not, you know, we're really not saying much to each other. And again, thankful for you and thankful for the opportunity to begin to express that. But those are the kind of things that keep me up at night. And it's also the understanding that we have so many vulnerable people in our communities that we don't see and that they're going through an incredible amount of pain and suffering. I have hopes that we can get through it, Alan.
David, one more question that I think everybody would want to ask you. You, of course, are a district attorney, but you're also a black man. You see what's going on. You referenced before that you had been pulled over driving while black. I have an African-American grandson, and I am extremely in love with him. And you just mentioned that you have kids. When and how do you have the conversation about how they interact with police?
I've had that conversation with my own kids, and I think, you know, as important as a conversation about the birds and the bees are, if you're a person of color and you're raising a family in the United States of America, you're having more conversations about history, about race relations than others are. That's just a fact. But in addition to pointing out, you know, those things, giving advice and sound advice as to what to do when confronted, you know, by those realities. That's also a very important part of the conversation. And I'm just hoping that, you know, for young men of color, for young, you know, women of color that don't have that parent at the table, that they're able to find adults that are willing to have those conversations with them as well.
David Soares, we treasure you. We salute you. We know how hard you work, and you do work hard. And, you know, you've had to think about some very complicated things. And we are very, very grateful for all you have done, and we so appreciate it. Thank you for being here today on the Capital Connection.
Most honored to be here. We live in a great state. And, Alan, I'm in this journey along with you. Thank you.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.